Jensen felt somehow uneasy when she realized that Sebastian wasn't offering any argument or trying to talk her out of it. The People's Palace is the heart of Dahara. It's not just the heart of Dahara, but the home of the Lord Rahl. Then he wouldn't be likely to expect you to go there, would he? Expect it or not, they would still be walking into the enemy's lair. No predator long neglected to notice the prey in his midst. They would be naked before his fangs. Jensen glanced over at the shadowed shape walking beside her. Sebastian, what are you doing in Dahara? You seem to have no love for the place. Why would you travel to a place you don't like? Beneath his hood, she saw his smile. Am I that obvious? Jensen shrugged. I've met travelers before. They talk about places they've been, sights they've seen, wonders, beautiful valleys, breathtaking mountains, fascinating cities. You don't speak of anywhere you've been or anything you've seen. You want the truth? He asked, his expression now serious. Jensen looked away. She suddenly felt awkward, nosy, especially in light of what she wasn't telling him. I'm sorry, I have no right to ask such a thing. Forget I mentioned it. I don't mind. He looked over at her with a wry smile. I don't think you would be one to report me to Daharan soldiers. She was appalled at the very idea. Of course not. Lord Rahl and his Daharan Empire wish to rule the world. I'm trying to help prevent that. I'm from south of Dahara, as I've told you before. I was sent by our leader, the Emperor of the Old World, Jagang the Just. I am Emperor Jagang's strategist. Then you're someone of high authority, she whispered in astonishment. A man of high rank. The astonishment quickly transformed to tingling intimidation. She feared to guess at his importance, his rank. In her mind, it rose by the moment, notch by notch. How am I to address one such as you? As Sebastian. But you're an important man. I'm a nobody. Oh, you're somebody, Jensen Daggett. The Lord Rahl himself does not hunt nobodies. Jensen felt an odd and unexpected sense of uneasiness. She harbored no love for Dahara, of course, but she still felt somewhat uncomfortable to know that Sebastian was there to help bring about the defeat of her land. The twinge of loyalty confused her. After all, the Lord Rahl had sent the man who had murdered her mother. The Lord Rahl hunted Jensen, wanted her dead. But it was the Lord Rahl who wanted her dead, not necessarily the people of her land. The mountains, the rivers, the vast plains, the trees and plant life had always all sheltered and nurtured her. She'd never really thought it through in that way before, that she could love her homeland, yet hate those who ruled it. If this Jagang the Just succeeded, though, she would be freed from her pursuer. If Dahara was defeated, Lord Rahl would be defeated. The rule of evil men would be ended. She would at last be free to live her own life. In light of how open he was with her, she also felt foolish, even ashamed for not telling Sebastian who she was and why Lord Rahl hunted her. She didn't know it all herself, but she knew enough to know that Sebastian would share the same fate as she if they caught him with her. As she thought about it, it began to make sense why he might not object to going to the People's Palace, why he might be willing to risk such a dangerous journey. As a strategist for the Emperor Jagang, perhaps Sebastian would like nothing better than to sneak a look into the enemy's lair. Here we are, he said. She looked up and saw the white clabbered face of the inn. A metal mug hanging from a bracket overhead squeaked as it swung to and fro in the wind. The sounds of singing and dancing spilled out into the snow-covered silence of the night. With an arm around her shoulders, Sebastian sheltered her as they made their way through the great room, shielded her from prying eyes, and led her to the stairs at the far side. If possible, the place was even more crowded and noisy than before. Without pause, the two of them quickly ascended the stairs. Partway down the dim hall, he unlocked a door to the right. Inside, Sebastian turned the wick up on the oil lamp, sitting on a small table. Alongside the lamp was a pitcher and wash basin, and near the table a bench. Looming to the side of the room sat a high bed covered crookedly with a dark brown blanket. The room was better than the home she had left, but Jensen didn't like it. One wall was overlaid with drab painted linen. The plastered walls were stained and fly-blown. Since the room was on the second floor, the only way down was back through the inn. She hated the stink of the room, a sour mixture of pipe smoke and urine. The chamber pot beneath the bed hadn't been emptied. As Jensen pulled a few things from her pack and went to the table to wash her face, Sebastian left her to it and went back downstairs. By the time she had finished washing and had brushed her hair, he returned with two bowls of lamb stew. He had brown bread, too, and mugs of ale. They ate sitting close together on the short bench, hunched over the table, close to the wavering light of the oil lamp. The stew didn't taste as good as it looked. She picked out the chunks of meat, but left the colorless, tasteless, soft vegetables. She sopped up some of the juice with the hard bread. She gave her ale to Sebastian and drank water instead. She wasn't used to drinking ale. To her, the ale smelled as unpleasant as the lamp oil. Sebastian seemed to like it. When she had finished eating, Jensen paced in the confining room the way Betty paced in her pen. Sebastian threw a leg to each side of the bench and leaned back against the wall. His blue eyes followed her from the bed to the wall hung with linen and back again as she began wearing a path in the plank floor. "Why don't you lie down and get some sleep?" he said in a soft voice. "I'll watch over you." She felt like a trapped animal. She watched him take a long draught of ale from his mug. "And what will we do tomorrow?" It wasn't only her dislike of the inn, of the room. Her conscience was eating at her. She didn't let him answer. "Sebastian, I have to tell you who I am. You are honest with me. I can't stay with you and endanger your mission. I don't know anything about the important things you do, but being with me will only put you at great risk. You've already helped me more than I could have hoped, more than I ever could have asked." "Jensen, I'm already at risk being here. I am in the land of my enemy." "And you're someone of high rank, an important man." She rubbed her hands together, trying to bring some warmth to her icy fingers. "If they captured you because you were with me, well, I couldn't bear it." "I took the risk of coming here." "But I haven't been honest with you. I haven't lied to you, but I haven't told you what I should have long ago. You're too important a man to chance being with me when you don't even know why I'm hunted or what that attack back at my house was about." She swallowed at the painful lump in her throat. "Why my mother lost her life." He said nothing but simply gave her the time to gather herself and tell him in her own way. From the first moment she had met him, and he hadn't come close when she had been afraid, he always gave her the room she needed in order to feel safe. He deserved more than she gave him in return. Jensen finally brought a halt to her pacing and looked down at him, at his blue eyes like hers, like her father's. "Sebastian, Lord Rawl, the last Lord Rawl, Darkenrawl, was my father." He took the news without any outward reaction. She couldn't know what he was thinking. As he gazed up at her, as calmly as he did when she wasn't telling him terrible news, she felt safe in his company. "My mother worked at the People's Palace. She was part of the palace staff. Darkenrawl, he noticed her. It is the Lord Rawl's prerogative to have any woman he wants." "Jensen, you don't..." She lifted a hand, silencing him. She wanted the whole thing out before she lost her nerve. Having always been with her mother, she feared being alone now. She feared he would abandon her, but she had to tell him what she knew. "She was 14, Jensen said, beginning the story as calmly as she could. "Too young to really understand about the ways of the world, of men. You saw how beautiful she was. At that young age, she was already pretty as could be, growing into a woman sooner than many her age. She had a bright smile and an innocent exuberance for life. She was a nobody, though, and to an extent excited to be noticed, desired by a man of such power, a man who could have any woman he wanted. That was foolish, of course, but at her age and station it was flattering, and in her innocence, I suppose it might even have seemed glamorous. She was bathed and pampered by older women on the palace staff, her hair done up like a real lady. She was dressed in a beautiful gown for her meeting with the great man himself. When she was brought to him, he bowed and gently kissed the back of her hand, her, a servant in his great palace, and he kissed her hand. From all accounts, he was so handsome that he shamed the finest marble statues. She had dinner with him in a great hall and ate rare and exotic food she had never tasted before. Just the two of them at a long dining table with people serving her for the first time in her life. He was charming. He complimented her on her beauty, her grace. He poured wine for her, the Lord Rawl himself. When she was at last alone with him, she was confronted with the reality of why she was there. She was too frightened to resist. Of course, had she not meekly submitted, he would have done what he wished anyway. Darkon Rawl was a powerful wizard. He was easily as cruel as he was charming. He could have handled any woman without the slightest difficulty. He had but to command it, and those who resisted his will were tortured to death. But she never gave any thought to resisting. For a brief time, despite her apprehension, that world, at the center of such splendor, such power, had probably seemed exciting. When it turned to terror for her, she bore it silently. It wasn't rape in the meaning of being taken against her will with a knife held to her throat, but it was a crime nonetheless, a savage crime. Jensen looked away from Sebastian's blue eyes. He took my mother to his bed for a period of time before he tired of her and moved on to other women. There were as many women as he could want. Even at that age, my mother didn't hold any foolish illusion that she meant something to him. She knew he was simply taking what he wanted for as long as he wanted, and that when he was finished with her, she would soon be forgotten. She was doing as a servant did, a flattered servant perhaps, but still a frightened, innocent young servant who knew better than to resist a man above any law but his own. She couldn't bear to look at Sebastian. In a small voice, she added the last bit to the tale. I was the result of that brief ordeal in her life, and the beginning of a far greater one. Jensen had never before told anyone the awful story, the terrible truth. She felt cold and dirty. She felt sick. Most of all, she felt deep anguish for what her mother must have gone through, for her young life spoiled. Her mother never told the story all out as Jensen had just done. Jensen had pieced snippets and snatches of it together over her whole life, until it was finally a whole picture in her mind. She wasn't telling Sebastian all the snippets either. The true extent of the horror of the way her mother had been treated by Darkon Rawl. Jensen felt burning shame that she had to be born to remind her mother every day of that terrible memory she could never tell in whole. When Jensen looked up through tears, Sebastian was standing close before her. His fingertips gently touched the side of her face. It was as tender a thing as she had ever felt. Jensen wiped the tears from under her eyes. The women and their children mean nothing to him. The Lord Rawl eliminates all those offspring who are not gifted. Since he takes many women, children of these couplings are not uncommon. He covets only one, his heir, the single child born of his seed who carries the gift. Richard Rawl, Sebastian said. Richard Rawl, she confirmed. My half-brother. Richard Rawl, her half-brother, who hunted her as his father before him had hunted her. Richard Rawl, her half-brother, who sent the quads to kill her. Richard Rawl, her half-brother, who had sent the quads that had murdered her mother. But why? She could have been no threat to Darkon Rawl, and even less of a threat to the new Lord Rawl. He was a powerful wizard who commanded armies, legions of the gifted, and countless other loyal supporters. And she? She was nothing but one lone woman who knew few people and wanted only to live her own simple life in peace. She was hardly a threat to his rule. Even the truth of her story would not so much as raise an eyebrow. Everyone knew that any Lord Rawl lived by his own laws. No one was even remotely likely to disbelieve her story, but no one would really care either. At most, they might wink or give one another a knowing elbow at the lives of powerful men, and Darkin Rawl had been the most powerful man alive. Jensen's whole life seemed suddenly to come down to that central question. Why would her father, a man she never knew, have wanted so desperately to kill her? And why would his son, Richard Rawl, her own half-brother and now the Lord Rawl, also be so intent on killing her? It made no sense. What could she possibly do that could harm either of them? What threat could she possibly constitute to such power? Jensen checked that the knife at her belt, her knife displaying the emblem of the House of Rawl, was secure. She lifted the blade to be sure it was free in its scabbard. The steel made a pleasing metallic click as she pushed it home. She scooped her cloak off the bed and threw it around her shoulders. Sebastian swiped a hand back across his white spikes of hair as he watched her quickly tie the cloak shut. "What do you think you're doing?" "I'll be back in a while. I'm going out." He reached for his weapons and cloak. "All right, I'll—" "No. Leave it to me, Sebastian. You've put yourself at risk enough on my behalf. I wish to go alone. I'll be back when I've finished." "Finished what?" She hurried to the door. "What I have to do." He stood in the center of the room, fists at his sides, apparently hesitant to go against her explicit wishes. Jensen quickly pulled the door shut tight behind herself, closing off her view of him. She took the steps two at a time, intent on being quickly out of the inn and gone before he changed his mind and followed. The crowd downstairs was as rowdy as they had been before. She ignored the men, their gambling, their dancing, their laughter, and headed for the door. Before she made it, though, a bearded man hooked his arm around her middle and jerked her back into the press of people. She let out a small cry that was lost in the gale of revelry. Her left arm was pinned against her waist. He swung her around, catching her right hand, dancing her across the floor. Jensen tried to reach up to pull back her hood, to free her red hair in order to give him a scare, but she couldn't liberate her arm. He held her other hand in an iron grip. Not only could she not free her hair, she couldn't reach her knife to defend herself. Her breath came in a frightened pant. The man laughed with his fellows and swirled her to the music, holding her tight lest he lose his dance with her. His eyes shone with merriment, not menace, but she knew that was only because she had not yet forcefully resisted. She knew that when he discovered that she was unwilling, his pleasant demeanor was sure to change. He released her waist and spun her around. With only one hand still entrapped in his calloused fingers, she hoped yet to break the hold. With her left hand, she fumbled for her knife, but it was under her cloak and not handy to her off hand. The crowd clapped in time with the tune of the pipes and drums. As she turned and stepped away, another man caught her up around the waist, bumping against her hard enough to knock the wind from her in a grunt. He captured her hand away from the first fellow. She had wasted her chance to pull back her hood by trying for the knife instead. She found herself adrift in a sea of men. The few other women, serving girls mostly, were either willing or laughed and were able to alight briefly and then move away like bugs that were able to walk on water. Jensen didn't know how they performed the trick. She was in danger of drowning among waves of men who passed her along from one to another. When she caught sight of the door, she yanked away suddenly, breaking the hold of the latest man to have her in his grip. He hadn't been expecting her to suddenly break free. The men all laughed at the fellow who had lost hold of her. His merriment, as she had expected, died. The rest of the men were more good-natured about it than she had expected, and sent up a cheer for her escape. Instead of showing anger, the man from whom she had escaped bowed. "Thank you, my beautiful lass, for the gracious dance. It was a kindness to a lumbering old soul such as me." His grin returned, and he winked at her before turning back to clap along with his fellows in time to the music. Jensen stood stunned, realizing that it had not been the danger she had expected. The men were having a good time and not really intent on harm. None had touched her in an unseemly manner or even spoken any crude words to her. They had only smiled, laughed, and danced with her. Still, Jensen made a quick line for the door. Before she went out, another arm caught her around the waist. Jensen started to fight and pull away. "I didn't know you liked to dance." It was Sebastian. She relaxed and let him usher her out of the inn. Out in the dark night, the cold air was a relief. She pulled a long breath, happy to be away from the unfamiliar smell of ale, pipe smoke, and sweaty men, happy to be away from the noise of so many people. "I told you to leave me to it," she said. "Leave you to what?" "I'm going to Lethea's place. Stay here, Sebastian, please." "If you tell me why you don't want me to go." She lifted a hand, but let it flop back to her side. "Sebastian, you're an important man. I feel terrible about the danger you've already been in, all because of me. This is my problem, not yours. My life is... I don't know. I don't have a life. You do. I don't want to get you all tangled up in my mess." She started out across the crusty snow. "Just wait here." He stuffed his hands in his pockets as he strode along beside her. "Jensen, I'm a grown man. Don't decide for me what I should be doing, all right?" She didn't answer as she turned the corner down a deserted street. "Tell me why you want to go see Lethea, will you?" She stopped then at the side of the road, close to an uninhabited building not far from the corner of the road that turned down to Lethea's place. "Sebastian, my whole life I've been running. My mother spent the better part of her life running from Darken Rall, hiding me. She died running from his son, Richard Rall. It was me Darken Rall was after, me Darken Rall wanted to kill, and now it's Richard Rall who is after me, who wants to kill me, and I don't know why. I'm sick of it. My life is nothing but running, hiding, and being afraid. It's all I do, all I think about. That's all my life is, running from a man trying to kill me, trying to stay a step ahead of him and stay alive." He didn't argue with her. "So why do you want to go to the sorceress?" Jensen pushed her hands under her cloak, under her arms, to warm them. She gazed down toward the dark road to Lethea's place, at the feathery canopy of bare branches moving in the wind. Some of the limbs creaked and groaned as they rubbed together. "I even ran from Lethea earlier. I don't know why Lord Rall is chasing me, but she does. I was afraid to insist she tell me. I was going to travel all the way to the People's Palace in order to find her sister, Althea, hoping that maybe as I stand meekly before her door, she might deign to tell me to help me." "What if she doesn't? What if she too dismisses me? Then what? What greater danger could there be than for me to go there to the People's Palace? And for what? The hollow hope that someone will finally volunteer to stoop to help a solitary woman hunted by the mighty force of a nation led by the murderous bastard son of a monster? Don't you see? If I would stop taking no for an answer and insist Lethea tell me, then maybe I could save a dangerous journey to the even more dangerous heart of Dahara and leave instead. For the first time in my life, I could be free then. But I was about to throw away that chance because I was afraid of Lethea too. I'm sick to death of being afraid." In the dim light, he weighed their options. "So let's just leave. Let me take you away from Dahara, if that's what you want." "No, not until I find out why Lord Rall wants to kill me." "Jensen, what difference does it make if..." "No!" Her fists tightened. "Not until I find out first why my mother had to die." She could feel bitter tears turning icy cold as they ran down her cheeks. Finally, Sebastian nodded. I understand. Let's go see Lethea. I'll help you get an answer from her. Maybe then you'll let me take you away from Dahara to where you will be safe. She brushed back the tears. Thank you, Sebastian. But don't you have some kind of job to do here? I can't let my problems get in your way any longer. This is my trouble. You must live your own life. He smiled then. Our people's spiritual guide, Brother Narev, says that our most important job in this life is helping those who need help. Such a sentiment lifted her spirits when she didn't think they could be lifted. He sounds like a wonderful man. He is. But you are still on a duty from your leader, Jagang the Just, aren't you? Brother Narev is also a close friend and spiritual guide to Emperor Jagang. Both men would want me to help you. I know they would. After all, the Lord Rahl is our enemy too. Lord Rahl has caused our people untold hardship. Both men, Brother Narev and Emperor Jagang, would insist I help you. That's the truth of it. She was choked with emotion and couldn't speak. She let him put his arm around her waist and lead her down the road, sharing the quiet darkness with him. Jensen listened to the soft sound of their boots crunching through the hard crust of snow. Lethea had to help her. Jensen intended to see to it. Chapter 11. Oba hated it to end, but he knew it had to. He would have to get home. His mother would be angry if he stayed too long in town. Besides, he could wring no more enjoyment out of Lethea. She had given him all the satisfaction she was ever going to give him. It had been fascinating while it lasted. Boundlessly fascinating. And he had learned many new things. Animals simply did not provide the same kind of sensations as those he had gotten from Lethea. True, watching a person die was in many ways much like watching an animal die. But at the same time, it was oh so very different. Oba had learned that. Who knew what a rat was really thinking, or if rats could even think at all? But people could think. You could see their mind through their eyes, and you knew. To know they were thinking real people thoughts, not some chicken, rabbit, rat thoughts, behind those human eyes, behind that look that said it all, was intoxicating. Witnessing Lethea's ordeal had been rapture, especially as he waited for that singular, inspirational instant of ultimate anguish when her soul fled her human form and the Keeper of the Dead received her into his eternal realm. Animals did give him a thrill, though, even if they lacked that human element. There was tremendous enjoyment to be had in nailing an animal to a fence or a barn wall and skinning them while they were still alive. But he didn't think they had a soul. They just died. Lethea had died too, but it had been a whole new experience. Lethea had made him grin like he had never grinned before. Oba unscrewed the top of the lamp, pulled out the woven wick, and dribbled lamp oil across the floor over the broken pieces of the trestle table around Lethea's medicine cabinet lying face down in the center of the room. As much as he knew he would enjoy it, he couldn't just leave her there to be discovered. There would be questions if she were found like this. He glanced over at her, especially if she were found like this. That idea did hold a certain fascination. He would enjoy listening to all the hysterical talk. He would love to hear people tell him all the macabre details of the monstrous death Lethea had suffered. The very idea of a man who could have taken the powerful sorceress out in such a grisly fashion would cause a sensation. People would want to know who had done it. To some folk, he would be an avenging hero. People everywhere would be abuzz. As the word spread about Lethea's ordeal and gruesome end, the gossip would heat to a fever pitch. That would be fun. As he emptied the last of the lamp oil, he saw his knife where he'd left it, beside the overturned cabinet. He tossed the empty lamp on the heap of ruin and bent to retrieve his knife. It was a mess. Couldn't have an omelet without breaking eggs, his mother always said. She said it a lot. In this case, Oba thought her tired old saw fit. With one hand, he took Lethea's favorite chair and tossed it into the center of the room, then began carefully cleaning his blade on the quilted throw from the chair. His knife was a valuable tool, and he kept it razor sharp. He was relieved to see the shine returning when the blood and slop was wiped off. He'd heard that magic could be troublesome in untold ways. Oba had briefly worried that the sorceress might be made up of some kind of dreadful acid sorceress blood that once spilled would eat through steel. He looked around. No, just regular blood. Lots of it. Yes, the sensation this would create would be exciting. But he didn't like the idea of soldiers coming around to ask questions. They were a suspicious lot, soldiers. They would poke their noses into it, sure as cows gave milk. They would spoil everything with their suspicion and questions. He didn't think that soldiers appreciated omelets. No, best if Lethea's house burned down. That wouldn't provide nearly the enjoyment that all the conversation and scandal would, but it also wouldn't be so suspicious. People's houses burned down all the time, especially in winter. Logs rolled out of fireplaces, spilling flaming coals. Sparks shot into curtains and set homes ablaze. Candles melted down and fell, catching things on fire. Happened all the time, not really suspicious. A fire in the dead of winter. With all the lightning and sparks the sorceress sent flying willy-nilly, it was a wonder the place hadn't already burned down. The woman was a menace. Of course, someone might notice the blaze way down at the end of the road, but by then it would be too late. By then the fire would be too hot for anyone to be able to come near the place. Tomorrow, if no one found the place ablaze, there would be nothing but ashes. He let out a sad sigh for the stillborn gossip, or what might have been, if not for the tragic fire that would be blamed for Lethea's end. Oba knew about fires. Over the years, several of his homes had burned down. Their animals had been burned alive. That was back when they had lived in other towns before they moved to the place where they lived now. Oba liked to watch a place burn, liked to hear the animals scream. He liked it when people came running all in a panic. They always seemed puny in the face of what he created. People were afraid when there was a fire. The uproar caused by a burning building always swelled him with a sense of power. Sometimes, as they yelled for more help, men would throw buckets of water on the fire or beat at the roaring flames with blankets, but that never stopped a fire Oba had started. He wasn't slipshod. He always did good work. He knew what he was doing. Finally finished cleaning and polishing his knife, he threw the bloody quilted throw on the oil-soaked wood beside the overturned cabinet. What was left of Lethea was nailed to the back of the cabinet that lay face down on the floor. She stared at the ceiling. Oba grinned. Soon there would be no ceiling for her to stare up at. His grin widened, and no eyes to stare with. Oba saw a glint of light on the floor beside the cabinet. He bent and recovered the small object. It was a gold coin. Oba had never seen a gold mark before that night. It must have fallen from the pocket of Lethea's dress along with the others. He slipped the gold coin into his own pocket, where he'd put the rest he had collected from the floor. He'd also found a fat purse under her sleeping pallet. Lethea had made him rich. Who knew that the sorceress had been so wealthy? Some of that money, earned by his mother from her spinning and used for his hated cures, had at last returned to Oba. Justice finally done. As Oba started for the fireplace, he heard the soft but unmistakable crunch of footsteps in the snow outside. He froze in mid-stride. The footsteps were coming closer. They were approaching the door to Lethea's house. Who would be coming to Lethea's place this late at night? That was just plain inconsiderate. Couldn't they wait until morning for their cures? Couldn't they let the poor woman get her rest? Some people only thought of themselves. Oba snatched up the poker leaning against the fireplace and quickly spilled the burning oak logs out of the hearth and across the oil-soaked floor. The oil, the splintered wood, the bedsheets, and the quilted throw caught flame with a whoosh. Dense white smoke swirled up around Lethea's pyre. Quick as a fox, Oba scurried out the hole that the troublesome sorceress had conveniently blown through the back wall when she had tried to kill him with her magic. She didn't know that he had become invincible. Jensen was pulled up short when Sebastian caught her by the arm. She turned to see his face in the dim light coming from the only window. That orange glow danced in his eyes. She knew immediately by his serious expression that she should remain silent. Sebastian noiselessly drew his sword as he slipped past her on his way to the door. In that smooth, practiced movement, she saw a professional, a man familiar with such business. He leaned to the side, trying for a look through the window without having to step into the deep snow below it. He turned back and whispered, "Fire." Jensen rushed to him. "Hurry, she might be asleep. We have to warn her." Sebastian considered for only an instant, then burst through the door. Jensen was right on his heels. She had difficulty making sense of what she saw inside. The place was washed in whirling orange light that cast monstrous shadows up the walls. In that wavering light, everything seemed surreal, out of scale, and out of place. When she spotted the debris in the center of the room, it became only too real. She saw a woman's open hand sticking out beyond the top of what looked to be a tall wooden cabinet that had fallen. Jensen drew a choking gasp of smoke and the smell of lamp oil. Thinking that maybe the cabinet had toppled and hurt the old sorceress, Jensen rushed to help. As she raced around the foot of the splintered chest, she caught the full view of what was left of Lethea. The shock of it stiffened her. She couldn't move, couldn't blink her wide eyes. She gagged on the sickly stench of butchery and blood. As Jensen stared, her anguished cry was lost in the leaping roar of flames and crackle of burning wood. Sebastian briefly took in the remains of Lethea nailed to the back of the cabinet, only one detail of many as his gaze scanned the room. By his calculated movements, she surmised that he had seen such things enough that the human element no longer arrested his attention as it did hers. "Jensen." Jensen's fingers tightened around the hilt of her knife. She could feel the ornately worked ridges of metal pressing against her palm, the worked metal peaks and whorls that made up the letter R. As she gasped her breath past the nausea welling up inside, she pulled the blade free. "Surrender."
"They've been here," she whispered. "The Daharan soldiers have been here."
What she detected in his eyes was more like surprise or confusion than anything else. He frowned as he glanced around again. "Do you really think so?"
"Jensen."
She ignored the echo of the dead voice in her head and thought back to the man they had met out on the road after they had come to see the sorceress the first time. He was big, blonde, and good-looking, like most Daharan soldiers. She hadn't thought at the time that he was a soldier. Could he have been one, though? No, if anything, he had seemed more intimidated by them than they were of him. Soldiers didn't behave the way that man had. "Who else? We didn't see all of them before. It had to be the rest of the quad from back at my house. When we escaped out the back way, they must have somehow followed us." He was still peering about as the flames grew, now licking at the ceiling. "I guess you could be right."
"Surrender."
"Sebastian, we have to get out of here now, or we'll be next." Jensen clutched the cloak at his shoulders, pulling him away. "They may be near, right now." "But how could they know?"
"Dear spirits, Lord Rahl is a wizard. How does he do anything he does? How did he find my house?"
Sebastian was still looking, prodding at the rubble with his sword. Jensen tugged again at his cloak, urging him toward the open door.
"Your house," he said, frowning.
"Yes, I see what you mean. We have to get out of here before they catch us." He nodded, reassuring her. "Where do you want to go?" They both watched the dark doorway over their shoulders, as well as the growing conflagration to their other side.
"We've no choice now," Jensen said. "Lethea was our only hope to find an answer. We have to go to the People's Palace now, find her sister Althea. She's the only one with any answers. She's a sorceress too, and the only one who can see the holes in the world, whatever that means."
"Are you sure that's what you want to do?"
She thought about the voice. It sounded so cold and lifeless in her head. It had surprised her. She hadn't heard it since her mother's murder. What other choice do we have now? If I'm ever to know why Lord Rawl wants to kill me, why he murdered my mother, why I'm hunted, and maybe how to escape his clutches for good, then I have to go to find this woman, Althea. I have to. He hurried with her through the door and out into the bitter night. We better go back and get our things together. We can get an early start. With them this close, I fear to be trapped in the inn while we sleep. I have the money from my mother. You have what you took from the men. We can buy horses. We have to leave tonight and hope that no one saw us come here earlier or again now. Sebastian sheathed his sword. His breath streamed out into the night as he considered their options. He glanced back through the door. With the fire, at least there won't be any evidence of what happened here. We have that much going for us. No one saw us come here earlier, so no one will have cause to ask us any questions. No one will know we were here again. They won't have any reason to tell soldiers about us. As long as we get out of here before it's discovered and everyone gets suspicious, Jensen said, before soldiers start asking about strangers in town. He took her arm. All right, let's be quick then. Chapter 12. Well, wasn't this just something? Stranger and stranger. This night was full of new things, one right after another. From his hiding place, just around the corner of the house, Oba had been able to hear much of the conversation between the two. At first, he had been sure they would run off to get help. Oba didn't think the fire could be extinguished, but for a time he had been concerned, fearing that the man and woman might pull Lethea out of the house, rescue her from the blaze so that people could have a look. It would be just like the troublesome sorceress to find a way to come back to torment him, and after all his work. But both the man and the woman wanted to leave Lethea to the fire. They, too, hoped the fire would cover the evidence of the sorceress's true end. They almost sounded like thieves, the woman talking about taking money from her mother and him taking money from men. That sounded suspicious. If they had found gold and silver there, they might have taken it. Had they worked and slaved their whole lives, as he had, to finally recover money that was their due? Or had they been forced to suffer the abuse of swallowing Lethea's cursed cures their whole life? Oba didn't think so. It had been different for him. He had simply recovered money that was rightfully his all along. He felt a little indignant to be almost in the company of common thieves. This night was just one startling thing after another. It seemed amazing to him how his life had gone along day after day, month after month, year after year, always the same, same chores, same work, same everything. Now, in one night, all that seemed to have changed. First, he had become invincible, and in so doing unleashed his righteous inner self, only to discover that raw blood coursed through his veins, and now this odd pair showed up to help him conceal Lethea's true end. Stranger and stranger. The startling news that he was in fact the son of Dark and Rawl still had him in a state of astonished shock. He, Oba Shock, as it turned out, was someone quite important. Someone of noble blood, someone of noble birth. He wondered whether or not he should now properly think of himself as Oba Rawl. He wondered if he was, in fact, a prince. That was an intriguing notion. Unfortunately, his mother had raised him simply, so he didn't know much about such matters, what station or title was rightfully his. He also realized that his mother was a liar. She had hidden his true identity from her own son, her flesh and blood, Darkin Rawl's flesh and blood. She was probably resentful and envious, and didn't want Oba to know of his greatness. That would be just like her. She was always trying to beat him down. The bitch. The smoke coming through the open door no longer smelled of lamp oil. It now carried the aroma of roasting meat. Oba grinned as he peeked through the doorway to see Lethea's hand sticking above the cabinet, blackening in the flames, waving to him from the world of the dead. Sneaking across the snow to hide behind the fat trunk of an oak, Oba watched as the couple hurried down the path, through the trees, toward the road. When they had passed out of sight, he followed in their tracks, staying hidden. He was a pretty big man to hide behind a tree, but in the darkness it wasn't difficult. He was puzzled and troubled by certain aspects of the encounter. He had been surprised that the couple wouldn't want to call for help and instead ran away. The woman, especially, was eager to escape, thinking that because of Lathea's death, someone was after them. A quad, she had said. That was part of what troubled him. Oba had vaguely heard of quads before, assassins of some sort, assassins sent by the Lord Rahl himself, assassins sent after important people, or people who were especially dangerous. Maybe that was it. They were dangerous people and not common thieves after all. Oba had heard her name, Jensen. But the thing that had really perked up his ears was that Lathea had a sister named Althea, yet another cursed sorceress. And Althea was the only one who could see the holes in the world. That was most troubling of all, because that was the very same thing that Lathea had said to him. At the time, he had thought the old sorceress was already conversing with the spirits in the world of the dead, or maybe with the keeper of the underworld himself. But as it turned out, she was speaking the truth. Somehow, this Jensen woman and Oba were both what Lathea called holes in the world. That sounded important. This Jensen was somehow like him. They were somehow connected. That fascinated him. He wished he had gotten a better look at her. The first meeting had been in darkness. The second time he saw her, just now, the fire had provided only enough light for a dim and shadowed view. As she had turned away, he only had time for a quick glimpse. From that fleeting look, he'd seen that she was a remarkably beautiful young woman. He paused behind a tree before making his way across the open snow toward the concealment of a more distant tree. These people, like Jensen, like Oba, who were holes in the world, were important. Quads were sent after important people. People who were especially dangerous to the Lord Rahl. Lathea had said that if he knew of Oba, the Lord Rahl would want to exterminate him. Oba didn't know if he believed Lathea. She would be jealous of anyone more important than herself. Still, he might be in some kind of danger without even knowing it, hunted because he was an important man. That seemed pretty far-fetched, but in view of all the other new things he had learned this night, he didn't think it was entirely out of the question. An important man, a man interested in learning new things, didn't just dismiss such new information without giving it due consideration. Oba was still trying to connect together all the things he had learned. It was all very complicated, that much he did know. He had to take everything into account if he was to put it all together. As he scurried to the next tree, he decided that it might be best if he went to the inn and got a better look at Jensen and Sebastian, the man with her. His eyes tracked them as they reached the road that headed back into town. Even though the couple kept looking around, it wasn't difficult in such darkness for Oba to follow them without being seen. Once they were back among the buildings, it was even easier. From around the corner of one building, Oba saw the light spill out into the road when they opened the door below a metal mug swinging in the wind. Laughter and music spilled out, too, like a celebration of the sorceress's demise. Too bad everyone didn't know that Oba was the hero who had done away with the bane of all their lives. If people knew what he had managed to accomplish, he would probably have all the free drinks he could want. He watched as Jensen and Sebastian were swallowed inside. The door thudded shut. The stillness of the winter night returned. Oba never got a chance to go to an inn for a drink. He never had any money. He had money now. He had had a hard night, but he had emerged a new man, a rich man. Wiping his nose on his jacket sleeve, he made for the door. It was time for him to go to a cozy inn and have a drink. If anyone deserved one, it was Oba Rahl.